from stpetecatalyst.com.
Welcome to Political Party with Adam Smith, and we have the better Adam, Adam Goodman. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, I couldn't wait to join the other Adam. I love your set, by the way. It couldn't be better.
We're getting close to the election, so I'm getting a little more cash. Your role here is to scare the bejesus out of Democrats, probably, I think. You predicted 4 years ago, pretty early on, that Donald Trump would be the next president. Most people didn't believe it. I read a column of yours in The Hill. Unfortunately, the Tampa Bay Times isn't running you lately. Where are you? Sound like you still are pretty bullish on Trump winning his second term.
Well, you know, the genesis of the first article, as you remember, was a lot of polls were saying Secretary Clinton had a healthy lead and Trump, with everything that was coming at him, couldn't possibly survive that. But there were two things going on in 16. One was there was a real thirst to kind of change the system. And the choices were a defender of the system who had been in the system for a long time, Secretary Clinton, or Donald Trump. So that went to Trump because of that. The second thing is, I think pollsters learned a lesson in 16, as did the media, by the way, in general, that you have to understand what's underneath the numbers to really understand what the numbers are telling you. And what the numbers were saying is people were frustrated. A lot of people in America who were working two and three jobs, having trouble making ends meet because wages weren't keeping up with costs. All those things were in play, and you could kind of feel it. And there was a sense that you couldn't say it, though, because Donald Trump was and is a very colorful person. And when you say I'm with Trump, that comes with some kind of baggage for a lot of people in terms of having to confront others who don't feel the same way. So that was, you know, they call it the hidden vote, the quiet vote. I saw that in 16. What's happening in 20, though, it's happening even more, I believe, that there's a quiet, hidden vote out there that, because of what you might say is the cancel culture environment and other things, are not or less willing to be out there to say who they're behind. So and you see some of the polls, Adam, where the refuse to respond, refuse to answer rate goes as high as 6 to 8%. And in those polls, I guarantee you, 3 out of 4 of those aren't pulling for Joe Biden. So if you look at it that way, and you look at, as you understand better than anyone, Adam, that this is an electoral college campaign and not a popular vote campaign, which Hillary, I think, still, you know, goes to bed with nightmares about. You look at the electoral math here, we're coming down to some of the same states, but some others that are different. Arizona, for instance, wasn't fully in play in 16. It is now, though.
Well, certainly, every state that is in play is a state Trump needs. I mean, he's completely on defense. But just to pin you down, you think he's going to pull it out?
I think he could pull it out, and here's the reason why. I think ultimately the states like Georgia, Arizona, elsewhere that have been traditional, Ohio, have been traditionally Republican, are going to be Republican when it's said and done. I really believe that. And you see the trend lines in Arizona in particular are going north for Trump. The last polls are basically literally a dead heat. And I see a dead heat for Donald Trump. I always make the assumption he's ahead because of what we talked about before. So I think they'll hold in those. I think the idea of Beto O'Rourke saying in Texas that, you know, now suddenly that state is Joe Biden's to lose, that's a little much to take, okay? Because that's going to, if that happened, obviously we're seeing a landslide election. Short of that, I think the president holds where he's expected to hold or was expected to hold, which brings us down to the collection of states. We always like, you know, paying too much attention to these states, perhaps. But it's different this time. I think in Michigan and Wisconsin, the president has a lot of ground to make up. I'm not sure he gets there, unlike last time. However, last week, Pennsylvania was opened up all over again because of what Joe Biden launched into the debate, which is unnecessary, another unforced error, when he went on both sides of fracking and scared the bejesus out of the oil and gas people, which, by the way, isn't just Exxon. It's tens of thousands of jobs for people in Pennsylvania and tens of millions of dollars for communities. So I think Pennsylvania is now fully in play. I'm hearing a lot of stuff coming from that state through people I know there that are saying this thing just turned, that being after the debate. So I think the president is going to carry, he carried Pennsylvania by 44,000 votes last time. I think he's going to carry Pennsylvania. And if he carries Pennsylvania, North Carolina, which is a dead heat trending Trump, our wonderful state of Florida, which we'll get into in a second, and Arizona, which is not had a, again, a, not supported a non-Republican nominee other than Bill Clinton in 1996, since 1972. So in the last 50 years, they've done that once. And of course, the X factor on 96 was it was a three-man race that included Ross Perot, who had 8% of the vote in Arizona. So you can even see that, that there is a reason for that exception. If you give those states, Adam, to the president in his column, and there's no shockers on election night, the electoral math ends up Trump plus six. Unbelievable.
All Pennsylvania. It's all Pennsylvania, really.
Well, you know, as Floridians, we will never confess to that. It's always all Florida. But once you, if you accept that, you know, Florida will be or has to be in the president's column, yes, I agree with you. I think Pennsylvania, that I thought he was in real trouble with not so long ago, I think he picked up late foot, not necessarily because of what he's pushing out there, but because of what his opponent did the other night.
Here's what really, I compulsively look at these early vote numbers, and it's a stupid thing to do because, you know, the buckets are so different. Vote Democrats are so into the vote by mail, used to be Republican. Republicans are so into early vote, and they're going to crush it on election day. So I think it's a very flawed exercise that I still do. But it's amazing. You know, it's Miami-Dade is basically terrible for, well, that's a stretch, but it's not looking good for Biden. And yet places like Pinellas, Hillsborough, a lot of the I-4 corridors looking great for Biden.
You're totally right, Adam. It's odd. It's odd math this time. But here's what, and I know you've been, you know, you've been told this, and you know, Republicans, like them or not, with them or not, they are very good at electoral math in Florida. They just aren't. And so the mail ballots have come in to the advantage of Democrats as expected. I think it's somewhere in the magnitude of 650,000. And right now, and the early voting has gone Republican to the tune of 300 and some thousand. So the net of that leaves us today at somewhere at or below the 300,000 mark in terms of the difference between Democratic ballots that have been cast and Republicans. Sounds big, right? It's right in the cone of victory for us because our models have said for the last 12 to 24 months that 350, 360 as a difference going into election day, being down 350 to 360,000 votes, going into election day is enough for us to win. If it's actually at 300, 275, 250, we're feeling very bullish, unless you factor in one other thing, which is, could there be meaningful Republican defection, any meaningful Republican defection from that? Unknown. What does it mean when you have a truly record vote? Who is it that actually showed up in 2000?
Normally, a huge turnout is good for the Democrats, but a super huge turnout leaves a lot of people on both sides nervous and uncertain.
Remember how convinced we were, Adam, in 2008? I don't want to speak for you. A lot of people, including myself, were convinced in 2018 that it looked very much like a Democratic midterm year in Florida. Gillum, by most accounts, was ahead and looked on his way to victory in the governor's race. And the Nelson race was considered closer, but with Nelson pulling it out. Neither thing happened. And the biggest reason was that totally unexpected surge of Republicans who voted in that midterm. So does that happen again? Could it happen again? Could it be that the kind of the narrative, which is suggested the president's been trailing, you know, really dry up to some extent, some of his election day enthusiasm and his vote? Don't know. And of course, what we really don't know is whether we're going to learn the final result on November 3rd, November 4th, a week from then, or sometime before noon on January 20th, when they swear in a new president. So this could go on for a while, but I'm suggesting, Adam, to everybody.
So this is, for those of you who don't know Adam, Adam has been in the media market doing commercials forever. He's helped elect a bazillion Republicans, especially in Florida, but he helped elect back when Rudy Giuliani wasn't sticking his hands in his pants in a Borat film, and Adam Goodman was helping elect a mayor of the city. I won't even go there, which I just did. But so my question for you is, basically 40% of America is looking at this, is looking at the Trump voters and saying, what in the world are they thinking? How is this possible? And I think 40% on the other side is saying the same thing. But what do you say to those 40% that just think Trump is objectively a pathological liar, bad person, terrible, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know what they're saying on CNN and MSNBC.
The one thing about Donald Trump is he doesn't leave people neutral. And you hear to those 40% you're asking about, they, I think, are going to have a hard time ever getting over the personal part of Donald Trump versus, you might say, the what he's done. Even what he's done, they're going to take great exception to his objections to the ACA, the Obamacare, to his nomination and now the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court, to his attitude about immigration.
But I think people can understand that. And maybe I'm projecting a little bit. I think people can understand that, John McCain or a Mitt Romney or a Jeb Bush would have done all that stuff. It's more the hard to defend behavior and demeanor sometimes and the nastiness that why is that fine with so many Americans?
Okay, here's a great question. It's not fine with Americans. It isn't. So people who support the president are, by and large, are not fine with those, some of those tweets and those outbursts, except just not fine with it. It really bothers them. But what bothers them more is when you strip that away, the contest before us is a true ideological throwdown between the progressive left, I'm not going socialist, but the progressive left, and the right. And if you look at the surveys that have been done of late, Gallup, the Media Research Center, and others, they say that basically somewhere between, Adam, 70 and 80% of America is center-right, meaning either moderates or conservatives. You put those two numbers together, you're at like 75%, roughly, 3 out of 4 Americans. The liberals are at 25%. The media is largely driven, I think, ideologically and feel affinity with the left. But the 3 out of 4 Americans who aren't there are hearing some of the other parts of this conversation that go beyond personality, where if it was who's most popular, likable, et cetera, I think Joe Biden would be the pick of America. But what he is representing, even the things that he's denying he represents, as he tries to stave off a lot of the suggestion he's the Trojan horse for the progressive liberal left, even with all that, there's a true sense in America that Joe Biden is not going to be calling all the shots. And you can chalk it up to his age, his mental acuity, whatever you want to put in there. He's not going to call all the shots, even if he wanted to.
I want to get some personal questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, what is the conversation at the, how are the Goodman family members all voting for Trump?
I can't disclose, other than there have been spirited conversations that have taken place ever since November of 2016, when they saw what Daddy was doing and where he was. You remember, as you knew, too, Adam, I was a very big supporter of Jeb Bush. My dad, Bob Goodman, was an early adopter and a big player behind Daddy Bush when he started running for president against Ronald Reagan. I love Jeb Bush's brand of leadership. I really do. I thought he was an incredible kind of a transcendent leader for Florida that had the courage of his convictions. And he's on top of it, a tremendously classy guy. So I started from there. I had to make kind of a transition from my sense of what inspired leadership looks like and sounds like to where we are now with the president of the United States, who's completely different. But the one thing I'm attracted by, and I think a lot of people are, is he's not afraid to take on convention. And starting, and you have 10,000 examples, but like foreign policy, he's taken it to China. I mean, I don't care all the talk about what did he have an investment in an account in China. The reality is he's going to take it to China more than Joe Biden. Kim Jong crazy, I call him, in North Korea. Yeah, I'm glad he met with him. I'm glad after 50 years of you know, discussions that went nowhere in a DMZ that grew deeper, that he tried to at least have an overture there. It was against every piece of advice from the foreign policy establishment, but it was worth a try, and it is worth a try in a world that's fundamentally different than it was back in the days of Ronald Reagan.
So I don't mean to paint you as the number one Trump supporter in the world, and I don't think you're working on the campaign, are you? You're probably doing a little. I heard Pam Bondi was doing some debate coaching, and I imagine you might have been involved in that.
Well, I love Pam Bondi. She is obviously a big friend of the Trump family and the campaign, is doing great things. No, I wasn't directly involved in that. I'm actually
good. Otherwise, you might have gotten COVID. I'm glad you didn't get COVID.
Well, it wouldn't matter, right? Because you and I are doing this virtually. But I'm one of those Republicans that kind of had to make a transition. And what I do find a little bit difficult to deal with, I understand why, right? With outside groups, the Lincoln Project and others, I understand why they're doing what they're doing, I think. But to completely turn against not just the president, but others as well, like Susan Collins. I really like Susan Collins in Maine. She's the current U.S. senator, been there for four terms, has been rated the most bipartisan senator in the United States Senate for the last 7 years running. But she may be getting her walking papers because the ads and the themes coming at her are suggesting she is a toady of Donald Trump because she votes with Donald Trump supposedly 90% of the time. Well, 90% is the lowest presidential unity or opposition score in the U.S. Senate today, which says how partisan they are. If we lose something like that, Adam, a person who really represents kind of the center-right, even though we're a center-right country, I really worry that the conversation just gets more extreme and people get more divided, regardless of who wins or loses on November 3rd or November 10th, whenever it's decided. And that is the biggest thing, I think, for all of us to be concerned about, more than does Donald Trump win re-election? Does Joe Biden end up defeating Donald Trump? And no, he's not a Trojan horse. He's just a knight on a white steed riding to save America.
You used to be partners with good old Rick Wilson, who's one of the leaders of the Lincoln Project. When's the last time you guys have talked?
Oh, we communicate off and on all the time. Rick's an amazingly talented, creative guy. And he really, whether you like it or not, he is very passionate about this president not being right for this country, certainly not now. And you have to applaud him and everyone else that are willing to get behind that. But we just don't see eye to eye on this. And my suspicion, I haven't gotten this from Rick, is that they're positioning in a way to help the country consider the third rail, the alternative, which is a more independent-minded candidate that is not beholden to either party. I think that's where that their intention may be. But, you know, a lot of these people, as you know, Adam, did a lot of work for Republicans over many, many years. And this is way before Donald Trump was anything more than the star of The Apprentice. And I find that, you know, for them to go almost wholesale against the party in a way, is a step too far.
Well, I won't defend them. They would say that we're in an existential crisis in the country.
Right.
They share some of the blame for some of what they, you know, feeding the beast in the, but anyway, where are you living now? Are you a voter in Washington, D.C. or Florida?
Well, I'm still a resident of Florida. I love Florida.
Well, damn it. I was hoping you were going to be voting in Washington and not Florida. I'm on Team Biden for this election.
I can imagine. Well, my much smarter and more capable partner, my wife, Liz Goodman, now works in Washington full time for a leading healthcare trade group. So this has kind of shifted me geographically more, but I still do a lot of work, obviously, in Florida. My heart will always be in Florida. And like you, I hope, very depressed about the Rays not quite making it in the World Series. I'm always going to be a local booster for the local teams.
Yeah, you're missing a lot of great sports. Lightning, Rays, Bucks.
Well, thank God we had television, so I'm not missing much. But it's a very special part of the world. And the nice thing, Adam, about your orientation, which is national, but you're so very knowledgeable about Florida. Florida is the ultimate kind of melting pot of America. Now, it's the place you go to try to figure out, as best you can, where America may be on anything, because when you put all of Florida together, you kind of get that. And that's why it makes it so interesting to work there and to help people in the public arena there, because as the nations maybe taste shift, you'll see that in Florida. You'll see that on issues. You'll see that in control of chambers, which may actually become an issue again in the near term in Florida. It's just it's a great place to be.
I want to let you go, and I know thanks for taking the time. Next time you're here or I'm up there, I'd love to get together. But let's say Trump loses. Whither the Republican Party after that, do you think?
Okay, great question. How many?
15 seconds. No.
Yeah, Adam?
No rush.
The obituary has been written for both parties countless times coming out of a losing cycle. And always we find, usually 2 years later, it goes 180. So I think if Republicans do not make it in 2022, I think it could be a big year for them. In 2024, even bigger. It's just the way the process works.
We'll watch it. Thank you, Adam. Great to see you.
Great to be with you again.
Careful in the swamp.
I'll be careful.
From stpcatalyst.com.